I'm staying back from you just a little bit more today. I feel great. My wife, Kristen, has COVID. She tested positive yesterday, so she's feeling lousy. She's home. She's watching the worship service through our Facebook live stream this morning. I feel great, but just in case, I've tested negative, but just in case, I'm carrying it. I'm staying back from you, and I'm not going to be greeting anybody after the service, so I'm just greeting you from afar and appreciating seeing you from afar this Sunday. Been away the last two Sundays. We were in Montana. My oldest son lives in Montana. We were helping him move apartments. He works at the Museum of the Rockies in Bozeman, and he's trying to finish up a degree there at Montana State, so we were helping him and getting in some lovely hikes, but it is always good to come back. Come back here, come back home, and come back and see you all. But I greet you from a distance so that I don't carry anything to you, just in case. Well, when I lived in Anne Arundel County, a neighbor of mine bought himself a cigarette boat. And for those of you who don't know what a cigarette boat is built for speed. That's its primary purpose. It's built to go fast on the water. That and to show off to all your friends. There's really no other purpose for a cigarette boat other than to go fast and to show off to all your friends. They get their name because of their long, sleek, white shape, and on the water in the horizon from a distance, it looks like a cigarette. Lovely. So my neighbor bought himself this cigarette boat, and he didn't have any place to keep it, so he kept it in the space in between my yard and his yard. And since he lived in the house right around the corner, it looked like he was sitting in my yard. Great. It wasn't that big of a deal, but kind of an eyesore, and I didn't really want to have to look at this guy's cigarette boat all the time, but I wasn't given any say in the matter. Well, one day, another neighbor was driving by, and he saw this cigarette boat sitting in my yard, or what he thought was my yard, and he got irritated about it because he thought it was mine. And he didn't think a pastor should own a cigarette boat. So he called up one of his friends, whom he knew was a member of the church, and said, "Hey, you need to pay your pastor less money." Oh yeah, well why is that? Well, because he bought himself a cigarette boat, and no pastor should have a cigarette boat. You need to pay your pastor less money. So this friend called me. "Is that your cigarette boat?" "No, that's not my cigarette boat. That's my neighbor's cigarette boat." "Oh, well that's what I thought." "But why do you ask?" "Well, this neighbor of ours," and then he explained the whole thing about this nosy neighbor. And my initial reaction was, "Well, geez, mind your own business." But later, I kind of thought it was kind of funny, so I shared it with the neighbor who owned the cigarette boat. He didn't find it funny at all. He was completely offended. Maybe he was offended because he figured out that if I was being judged, then he was being judged too, indirectly, right? "Well, that's none of that guy's business. Who cares if you buy that boat? You can do anything you want with your money. Who cares how you spend your money?" And there you have it. Two completely opposite reactions, two completely opposite reactions that illustrate just how differently we think in this world of ours, both expressions of judgment. One from a perfect stranger who cared a great deal about how a pastor, even though it's not his pastor in his church and probably didn't even go to church, but cares a great deal about how this pastor spends his money. And the other from a person who felt that a pastor or anybody could do anything they want with their money. Spend your money however you want. It's your money. It doesn't belong to anybody else, and it's really none of their business. And then there was me right smack dab in the middle, appreciating this argument going on from both sides around me. By the way, I would never buy a cigarette boat. I've never owned a boat. I've been boating my whole life, but I've always worked through camps and boating companies. Boats are too expensive to own. So if you ever drive by my house and see a cigarette boat sitting in my yard, Mind your own business. No, I'm just kidding. Just know that's not mine. It belongs to somebody else. Well, we have opinions on how people spend their money. And sometimes we have strong opinions on how people spend their money. And sometimes we have opinions on how we spend our own money. Ah, I shouldn't have bought that. Why did I buy that? But we save our deepest mistrust and our deepest judgment for others. Did you see that new house that so-and-so bought? Did you see that new car that so-and-so bought? Did you see the wedding? Did you see how much they spent on the wedding? Did you see that they're in Europe again? Again? Yeah. I thought they were teachers. They are teachers. How do they have money to go to Europe again? I don't know. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they have so much money to go to Europe every year. Whether we like it or not, people will judge. Just last week, the headline broke in the news about a pastor and his wife who were robbed at gunpoint in church. The bandits stole almost $1 million worth of jewelry just between the pastor and his wife alone. Now, robbing anyone of anything is a terrible crime and a terrible sin. But the sting of that crime was diminished once people realized that this pastor and his wife had on them in the worship service between the two of them almost $1 million worth of jewelry. Who wears $1 million worth of jewelry anywhere, let alone church? Who owns $1 million worth of jewelry? But there I go judging, right? But I'm not alone. The public reaction across the board was less than sympathetic. The pastor and his wife didn't come across as poor victims. They came across as rich and flashy and spending lavishly. And some saw it as Robin Hood justice. I am not glad that he was robbed. I'm very sad that he was robbed, especially in church, especially in that way. But as I see it, there are two wrongs here, and two wrongs don't make a right. The pastor's response: this isn't about me being flashy. This is me purchasing what I want to purchase. It's my prerogative. I worked hard for the money. I earned the money. I can buy what I want to buy. Sound familiar? Just like my neighbor with the cigarette boat. You can buy anything you want to buy, and it's really nobody else's business how you spend your money. Well, some people would agree with that, and some people wouldn't agree with that. And whether you agree or disagree has a little bit to do with ethics, but it also has a little bit to do with whether we like the person or not. And sometimes it has to do with degrees, because there are certain degrees, and everybody gets to a certain point where they cross the line and they lose all of us behind. So why does any of this matter? And why are we talking about this in church? Because spending money is a biblical issue. Spending money is a moral issue. How we make money, how we use our money, how we use our resources in general, all part of a category that we call stewardship. And stewardship is a biblical issue. Stewardship is a moral issue. And in the 12th chapter of Luke's gospel that Mike just read for us, we have an example of that. We are launching into a new sermon series this Sunday. We're leaving our sacred community sermon series behind. We're moving into the gospel of Luke. This sermon series that we're working on is not quite as neat and tidy as some of the other ones are, because it doesn't have an end date. We're just focusing on the lectionary readings, the gospel lectionary readings. And the gospel lectionary right now is Luke's gospel. So we're not starting at the beginning of Luke. We're starting right smack dab in the middle of Luke. That's because that's where the lectionary readings pick up this time of year. So we're just going to launch into that, and we're going to stick with that. The teachings of Jesus. The teachings of Jesus in Luke's gospel. And you can follow along if you like. I'll put the readings for you in the eSpire each week, and you can read along with us. It's always more fun when we read along together. But in the 12th chapter of Luke, we are introduced to the parable of the rich fool. Maybe you're familiar with it. Jesus was teaching, as Jesus frequently did, and a huge crowd had gathered. The original Greek says 10,000. Maybe that was a literal number, maybe it wasn't. The numbers in the Bible aren't always literal. Sometimes numbers in the Bible are symbolic. But suffice to say that this was a really, really big crowd that had gathered for Jesus. Jesus had become quite popular. And from the thousands who had gathered, one man shouted out from the crowd, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." Oh boy. That's going to open up a can of worms, isn't it? And may sound all too familiar. It is a timeless request. Divide the family inheritance. Well, this man must have seen in Jesus something that said to him, Jesus was a judge. They didn't have courts and legal systems and a judicial system back then like we do today, but they did have judges, appointed judges, who were meant to arbitrate over matters just like this. And this man must have assumed that Jesus was a qualified judge, which I think is probably a compliment, right? I see in you, Jesus, matters of fairness, matters of justice. You're a good man. So rule here, arbitrate between my brother and me in this matter. Jesus wanted nothing to do with it. Friend, who set me to be judge and arbitrator over you? And probably good that Jesus sidestepped the matter, because who's in the right and who's in the wrong when families fight? Who's in the right and who's in the wrong when families argue over property and homes and possessions and things? And there's a lot of gray areas in these matters. And there's often a deeper issue at stake: greed. And that's what Jesus chose to address, the greed. And he did so with this parable of the rich fool. And he told the story about a farmer who was very successful. Very, very successful. In a world where people often didn't have enough food to provide for themselves and didn't have enough crops to eat, this man had more than enough for himself, more than enough to share with others. He could give away most of what he had and still be completely full and still be completely satisfied and happy in life. He had multiple barns. And multiple barns in the ancient world was a sign of wealth. And he was in a position where he was going to tear down his multiple barns and build bigger multiple barns. This was wealth piled on top of wealth. This man was doing very well. And in this man's mind, life was good. Well, of course it was. This man could sleep well at night. He didn't have worries like we have worries about where we're going to put food on the table the next day. This man could relax. And in his own words, he could eat, drink, and be merry, to quote the good book from Ecclesiastes, and feel justified in doing so. There's no crime here. This man has done nothing wrong. As far as we know, this man has done everything right. He's not cheated, he's not lied, he's not stolen. He's a successful businessman who has exceeded expectations, vastly exceeded expectations. This man is like Elon Musk, raised up, appreciated, respected, valued, perhaps resented just a little bit on the side, but that's who he was. And this is the man God called a fool. Now, I would imagine that some of us might be taken aback just a little bit. Some of us might be surprised and shocked by this, and some of us might even struggle with this because in a success-driven society like our own, this is the definition of success. This is the epitome of success. This man's made it. He's done it. Congratulations. Pat him on the back. You've won. You're the best. There's nobody better than you. You are the model for everybody to follow. If everybody else could be just like you, what a great and wonderful world this would be. What could possibly be foolish about any of it? Well, he's forgotten the most critical piece of all. He's forgotten the most important piece, the question of commitment, the question of priorities. Where do our commitments lie? Where do our priorities lie? Are they focused on heavenly things or are they focused on earthly things? Because one is eternal and one is temporary. It seems like it's going to last a lifetime, but that lifetime is fleeting. And we ought to give some thought to that which is eternal. Has this man done anything wrong? Not directly. It's more about what this man hasn't done. Maybe more like Ebenezer Scrooge, which explains God's response to him. You fool, this very night, your life is being demanded of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up for themselves treasures, but are not rich toward God. And so the question that has been posed down through the ages gets posed to us as well. Are you rich? And if so, are you rich toward God? And if not, why not? This is not the passage, by the way, that inspired Charles Dickens to write A Christmas Carol with Ebenezer Scrooge, by the way. That passage is also in Luke's gospel. It's the passage of Lazarus and the rich man, and that comes just a little later in Luke's gospel. But Luke is laying the groundwork, the foundation for that story, because Luke had a lot to say about stewardship. Now, being successful and being in love with God are not mutually exclusive terms. Successful people and successful business people can be very much in love with God, and they can use what they have, and they can use their gifts, and they can use their resources to glorify God and to do great things and to build up the kingdom and to share with others and do wonderful things in the world. But are they? And are we? And that's the question before us this week. Where are our commitments? Where do our priorities lie? In my father's book, Offerings, he uses an illustration of a refrigerator. If you want to learn a person's priorities in life, take a look at their refrigerator. What do you see on a person's refrigerator? You see their priorities. Priceless works of art that their kids and their grandkids have brought home from school. Family pictures, weddings, graduations, vacations, Christmas cards, and magnets from all the places they've been and gone around the world. Memories, good times, quality time, family time, the things that are important to God. You might even see a special prayer or a verse of scripture or a word of inspiration. Not once will you see plastered on somebody's refrigerator their paycheck or their bank account or their stock account or their portfolios or the value of their home. Why? Priorities. What we plaster on our refrigerator is what is important in life. And if we ever forget, go home and take a look at your refrigerator. Not inside, on the outside, and you'll see where your priorities are. What's on them? That which is eternal. That which is closest to God's heart. The things that are important to God. The things that we should be storing up. The rest of it, fleeting. Fleeting. Here today, gone tomorrow. Where are your commitments? Where do our priorities lie? So be it. Amen.